You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
I saw this story. It was a couple of weeks ago. We had Johnny Bench on, the best catcher in history, two-time World Series champ. And Johnny was going to auction off a lot of his items. And I think what we think, and when I was growing up, I thought Johnny Bench and Pete Rose and Joe Morgan and Tony Perez, they must be as rich as anybody in the country because they played for the Big Red Machine and they won World Series titles. And then you realize what they got paid when they were playing is a whole lot different than what these athletes are getting paid now. And, you know, I was a little bit sad that Johnny had to, you know, auction off his items. You're talking about MVP, won the MVP a couple of times. There are other things, that gold gloves in there. And I saw the story. Todd goes, hey, Johnny's going to keep all of his memorabilia. And I go, wait, he's not going to auction it? And he goes, no, somebody bought all of it and gave it back to him. I said, well, we got to have Johnny on because talk about a financial angel there. And Johnny Bench joining us on the program. When did you hear about it? What was your reaction when you got, you know, most of your memorabilia back?
The auction was on Saturday, and then on Monday, David Hunt from Hunt Auctions called me and said it was a great auction and everything else. He said, are you sitting down? And I said, yeah. He said, well, there's a guy that wants to be remain anonymous. And he said, but he bought 35 of your items and he wants to give them back to you. Well, I mean, I lost it. I absolutely lost it. I was tears rolling down and, you know, I mean, it's breathtaking. And to think that, you know, somebody thought of you enough, I mean, you couldn't believe that that would happen. And he said, the only thing he told me to tell you was it was from a white haired old Jew. So I only know one white-haired old Jew. All you have to do is Google 76ers sixth man. I met this guy when I was 19. He was 23. We were in Puerto Rico. We became friends. It was just, you know, and every time I went to Philadelphia, we went out. We had it. He never had kids. He had a Rolls Royce. We drove around. And he would come to spring training every year. And we were just great friends. And he was in real estate business in Philadelphia. And so I said, I'm looking for a white-haired old Jew. And I said, you know, and after I've wiped all the tears away and I'm trying to compose myself to even think that this would even happen, I just can't think enough. And if I'm barking up the wrong Jew, let me know. And he texts back and said, no, you got the right Jew. And he said, look, I can afford it. And he had texted me about 5 days before that and had said, why are you doing it?
And this is Alan Horowitz. This is Alan Horowitz.
This is Alan Horowitz, yes. Yeah. And I said, I'm doing it for the kids. I said, you know, I've seen too many families torn apart, whether it be with memorabilia from a celebrity or an athlete to people who have picked paintings and antique furniture that do it. And I wanted to make sure that my kids were secure. And, you know, I just turned 73. So, you know, and all these things that are happening to our people around us, it was the right decision. And now... it's incredible, Dan. I mean, it's just unfathomable that this could happen.
How much did he spend for those 35 items?
Over $1 million.
Oh, man.
And so with that, I started designating the Baseball Hall of Fame. I called Jane Clark, the chairman. I said, this is what's happening. And what items do you want? And then the Reds Hall of Fame and then Oklahoma Sports Hall of Fame. And it was like, I mean, these people were over the top. They're saying, you know, the guy, Mike James in Oklahoma, said, you know, his first thing they ask is, where's Johnny's exhibit? And now we're able to put gold gloves and we're able to put items in there, MVP trophies or whatever that they wanted. And a couple and several will go to Binger. But, you know, and it was interesting. The kid said, Dad, now everybody will be able to see.
Yeah, it's true.
And he said, I didn't want these in the hands of collectors that would, people would never, your fans, your family would never be able to see them. And, I would have sent one to you, but your desk is totally full.
I would have gotten rid of a Danette. I would have gotten rid of Todd and put maybe your gold glove over there instead of him. Absolutely.
So when that would have made a great four shot. Yeah.
How do you explain to your kids what happened?
Oh, I've tried. And they say, really? I mean, they can't really get their heads around it. I called my attorney first and I said, this is what happened. And he just sat there. He was stunned. And then he called me back 10 minutes later and said, I still can't believe this. He said, and then he's called me back the next day. And the people that have heard about it. And now the response is just, Alan Horowitz is the angel, yeah. I believe there are angels among us. I mean, it's the Alabama song. And I don't know that, Dan, can you ever imagine someone actually, this actually happening? And it's still, we talked yesterday and the only thing he wants is to meet the kids, and I'll take him to Philadelphia as soon as the COVID clears and we can get up there and meet this great man.
Didn't you do enough damage to the Phillies where they shouldn't be helping you?
Well, he was more of a 76ers fan. I made him a Reds fan, so it wasn't much the damage. Yeah. I mean, I did like Philadelphia, though. Very, very good to me. Yes.
I was bringing this up the other day that it seems like the life expectancy of a stadium is around 30 years. Like Riverfront, Three Rivers, the Vet, they all look like big ashtrays there. I'm wondering, Johnny, if Fenway was built 30 years ago or Wrigley built 30 years ago, would they still be standing? Because it feels like we move on, like we have to have a new one.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I don't think there's any question that Wrigley and Fenway would be, totally redundant. If you put a modern ballpark out there, then they got to change dimensions. And, it becomes just a cult thing for these people. I mean, you can see the way they sell out every year, every game in Boston, how Wrigley fans want to be out there, how they're building the scoreboards, and how do you change something? And you lose the aura of what these really are. It's a mystique about them that makes everybody across the country, where do you want to go? Well, I want to go to Wrigley Field.
Yeah.
I think that's the one thing. And I think they feel like in Wrigley Field, you can get into a game. You can actually do that. In Boston, it's pretty much season tickets. But it's still a standard.
Best ballpark, though, you ever played in?
Wow. I think the first time going into Dodger Stadium, I never liked to play there because they always had great pitching, but it was like you couldn't stand at second base and they had a fungo out of there. So, and the first time I walked into the Astrodome, and our manager had a meeting before the game, says, all right, get out there now, look at all the stuff in the stadium, get it over with so you can focus on the game. And, they had those Cowboys riding across there and stars shooting and fireworks. You went by the ballpark where you were most comfortable. Shea Stadium had all the trash and all the airplanes flying over. You got to San Francisco and Stu Miller blew off the mound. And, I wore pantyhose one night just to try to keep warm. And, and the wind's blowing across and the fog. And I would throw it towards shortstop so it would blow towards second base.
Wait, go back to the pantyhose here.
Somebody we were trying to look for long johns and they were so thick at the time, and I don't want to blame Namath or anything else for doing that, but somebody said that you could actually wear pantyhose and it would keep you warmer, and it was cold out there, and no, I couldn't buy any that didn't run, and I hate a run in a stocking. That's the worst thing. So I did away with those. They only made San Francisco.
Could I, now if that's up for auction, I'll bid on your pantyhose.
Okay. I won't go there, Dan, I'm sure your wife would love you running around the rat.
Yeah.
These are Johnny's pantyhose.
Yeah.
Look at these, honey.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And I paid good money for them. Were you, I'm going to guess you were there. Didn't Stargell hit one of the longest home runs ever at Riverfront? Was it upper deck where they
way, way upper deck?
What did they change one of the seats out to mark how far Stargell hit it in Riverfront?
I believe it was. And they've done that in a couple of stages where Bernie Carbo hit one off of Nolan Ryan one night in the Astrodome that went up way up in the upper, and they started putting targets on it. And then the pitchers would get upset that their name was on the list of giving up the long one. But
Stargell hit one of the longest home runs.
Well, you might have been there.
I might have, but I just remember it kept going. And I lost track, because normally you would look in the green seats at Riverfront, and it just kept going, and I'd lost track of it. I thought he hit it out of the stadium.
I know. I mean, that was the thing where the upper deck was a no man's land. I mean, Dave Concepcion hit one in the upper deck in left field. And I hit one off the facing off of John Montefusco one time. And that was my claim to fame, but I never got one in the upper deck. But Willie's must have gone 15 or 20 rows up. I mean, it was just, and I can still, he crossed home plate and just looked at me and shrugged his shoulders. He just shrugged his shoulders. He was such a great guy. And he'd whip that bat around and he'd roll that bat around. And then, but he was the nicest guy, but he just sort of shrugged his shoulders. I'd look at him when he came across home plate. I've been there for some good ones.
Did you ever pull a Crash Davis and tell the batter what was coming?
No. I remember when Clay Dalrymple was the catcher for the Phillies, and Gene Mauch told Clay to tell Pete what was coming because they couldn't get him out. And said, Clay said, told Pete, said, look, Gene wants me to tell you what's coming. And so he said, okay, first pitch, here's a fastball, right down the middle, strike one. All right, here comes a curveball, strike two. And Pete's just standing there looking at it and everything else, and he stepped out of the box and told the umpire, would you tell him to quit talking to me? I don't want to know what's coming. One night we were in Montreal, and Gary Carter was the catcher, and Dan Schatzsader was the pitcher. It was the perfect count for a 2-1 slider on the outside. And I looked back at the kid, and I said, kid, watch this one. He threw me the slider about 30 rows. How do you do that, kid, when I crossed home plate?
Wait, you knew what he was going to do. He was setting you up, and you were...
Yeah, it was just a situation where I knew that was his favorite pitch. He was going to try that slider on the outside and break it over, and I said, watch this one, kid.
Well, I'm happy for you. You got to everybody shares in this. Everybody benefits, and they get to see that memorabilia. And once again, great thumbs up. Thanks to Alan Horowitz. It is Hanukkah, so you know he came to the rescue and gave you a wonderful gift there. And
I want to cry now. But Merry Christmas to all of you and the Danettes, and I hope you're well. I hope your health is good.
Thank you, buddy. That's the great Johnny Bench. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern, or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app. Opening night in the NBA is 12 days away. Jonathan Fagan, who covers the Rockets, the beat writer for the Houston Chronicle, joining us. And Jonathan, any drama, any updates here?
Well, I don't know if James Harden's been able to get his league pass working so he can watch the preseason game tonight. That might be drama. Other than that, I think today's been quiet so far.
All right, update us on where things stand. What is fact and what is fiction here with the Rockets and Harden?
Yeah, I mean, the overriding fact is he wants to be to a team he can consider a contender, which he considered the Rockets to be in past years and apparently no longer feels that this team is a championship contender. That part hovers over everything. He showed up on Tuesday, began his COVID protocol testing, should be able to practice when the team gets back from Chicago on Monday. Assuming everything goes well with the testing. And the Rockets have to decide what they want to do is slow play this as much as possible. Take their time, determine when, if they are to deal him, they can get the best deal. Now, trade deadline or next summer, factoring in that if you can determine, yeah, I get a better deal later, you also have a chance, however small or to whatever degree the chance is, that he'll decide, hey, this team's good. I want to be here. I don't know how great a chance that is, but if you trade him, there is no chance of that. So there's advantages for them to wait.
What do you make of the report yesterday that you can add the Miami Heat and Milwaukee Bucks to that list with the Nets and the 76ers? Who's adding that? Harden is adding that?
Yes. He had previously told them contenders. So putting names by the word contenders doesn't really change much. We can all determine who the contenders are. And if we were, we would probably start with the best record in the league last year and the team that went to the finals in the Eastern Conference last year. So that doesn't really move the ball when it comes to the decisions the Rockets have to make. The Rockets, if they are to trade him, they can trade him anywhere they want. And to me, if you're a bad team, if you're a team stuck in that never get in the playoffs or barely fight to be a first round loser team, hey, load it all up. Go for them. Now, most of those teams don't have anything to load up or not enough, but the Rockets are not in any way compelled to move him to a contender. They just got to move to whatever team gets the most back, which is a future star. They want his successor as the next star, and they want a haul of draft picks.
Why aren't the Knicks in on this, Jonathan? Like, the Knicks usually do something stupid, and why not have somebody that people show up to watch?
Well, there's a chance the Knicks are no longer the stupid Knicks, that they finally have escaped that. And but do they have the guy who's going to be that next star? Yeah. Do any of their young up-and-comer, R.J. Barrett or something, to the Rockets say, oh, boy, you know, we're going to rebuild around that guy. That's where they fall short. Okay. And so and that's where we can both go back and forth. Well, what about this? What about Cleveland? What about Minnesota? You start looking at teams, and you can make the money work, but who's got a next best player? In other words, teams aren't trading their best player. Whose next best player fits the Rockets' criteria of a successor to James Harden?
And I'm trying to understand this, though, Jonathan, and you're there on the front lines, but it feels like James Harden has been running this organization for a while, or at least deciding who's coming and who's going. If it's a coach who's going to be going and another coach comes in, I think he might have wanted Ty Lue instead of Silas, but James Harden was trying to build himself a championship team. It didn't work. And now he wants out, and I got to blame him for some of the things that have happened here. Like, he doesn't take ownership in this to say, you know what, it didn't work. Let's try another way, a new philosophy.
Yeah, it's good to be the king. Yeah, it's absolutely. I mean, the most obvious example is he really wanted to reunite with Russell Westbrook. They remained friends, and they do still, by the way. They are still friends, and they never really had issues, but they weren't a good fit from the idea. And obviously, to now, he wanted that, and the Rockets, to use their term, went all in for that. I mean, two lightly protected first-round picks, Chris Paul, and two potential pick swaps. They traded much of their future. And now, they thought it was good, too. At the time, Chris Paul had an injury-filled year. They thought there was a chance that would be the future for him. So it's not like he dragged them kicking and screaming and they didn't want it, but they did it to appease him. That's not it at all. But he wanted it badly. And he made that very clear to Daryl Morey, who went all out to go all in. I mean, that's the most obvious example. But yeah, he's made a lot of decisions or had a lot of influence, and he's been kept in the loop on all kinds of things for years because they thought, Daryl especially believed, that creates a partnership. Well, the partnership doesn't seem to be going very well right now because he it's sort of like, hey, we had a great year, 8 years of marriage, but, you know, I found somebody better. You know, the one you want to leave isn't too thrilled with that.
What happens next year?
I think the most likely thing is he shows up and practices Monday, and they carry this on into the season in the hopes that they'll be good enough that and he is a very prideful player. He's a very driven player. They're not concerned he's going to pout his way through the season or anything like that. The Rockets don't believe that'll be the case. It's a huge setback, though, with a new coach and a lot of new players. It's a huge setback losing a week of practices with him in this kind of season. But that's what is the most likely. If they're not a good team, if they're a fringe playoff team, do they have to make a move at the trade deadline, or do they do it next summer? One thing to keep in mind, Rafael Stone, the new general manager, is very capable of saying no. James, I want to be traded. Do it now. No. Yeah, but I want to go to Brooklyn. No. Rafael, he can do that, and he would do that. That whatever decision they make is going to affect this franchise for 5 to 7 years. So half a season when there's hardly any fans in the building anyway, they can put up with that and do whatever they think is best whenever that comes.
Who's in better shape, the Rockets or the Texans?
Well, you know, the Texans have the superstar, right? They have Deshaun Watson. So my inclination is to say them. The Rockets have the asset, and it is basketball where, you know, one great asset brings one great player. You're suddenly a factor. You know, I'll say the Rockets have a general manager. You know, they have a coach. They have a general manager. Both teams have stars right now, although it's probably more unpleasant right now and difficult. They really like the coach they picked. They're very happy with that choice. The Texans don't know who their coach is going to be. So, Rockets.
Jonathan, should be fun. We appreciate your time. Thank you. Have a good weekend.
All right. Thanks. You too. Happy holidays.
That's Jonathan Fagan. He covers the Rockets for the Houston Chronicle. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live on the Peacock app. Rams roll the Patriots 24-3. Bill Belichick is backing Cam Newton. What else do you expect him to say? Let's bring in the peripatetic Tom E. Curran, the Patriots insider, NBC Sports Boston, who joins us on the program. What was the difference between the Chargers game and last night's game there, Tom?
Patriots got behind, and when they are behind, Cam effectively ties their hands in being able to rally because he is a one-dimensional quarterback. Against the Chargers, they scored in the first drive. They came back. They had a blocked field goal for a touchdown. They had a pick. They had a punt return for a touchdown. Party was over. But in this instance, there was no digging out because Cam only can dig deeper.
It was a couple of weeks ago, I think, when you wrote a column and you said that the Patriots sort of know what they have with Cam Newton. What is it, and what's that mean for the future?
Like, what it is probably, weirdly, Dan, it's the best case scenario for this year because they are so bereft of offensive weaponry. And you see it during these games. I don't know if anybody would be getting a hell of a lot more out of it, whether it was Kyler Murray or Russell Wilson, Tom Brady, or Cam Newton. They're so challenged at the wide receiver spot. So what you have in Newton is a guy who can run for 11 touchdowns, who can be a red zone threat, who can pick up third and twos by bullying forward, but you pay the price otherwise. So they know that you can't have him, at least in my estimation. Bill might think differently, but this is an anachronistic offense. It's a 1950s high school offense where you just have the biggest kid on the block and say he's going to run you over. And then if the other team has a good kid too from the other neighborhood, you're screwed.
That being Aaron Donald,
or that being, well, not even Jared Goff, but that being Deshaun Watson, or it being a coach. I think really, too, it was a fair fight on the sidelines that Bill was engaged in last night. Sometimes you can just big brain the opposition, and last night I don't think that was the case.
All right, so what's the goal, do you think, with this team for the rest of the year?
What it should be, excuse me, is making sure that they know what they have going into the 2021 offseason. They have like $60 million in cap space. They're probably going to be a top 15 selector. They should know whether or not Jarrett Stidham can play even a little. They should be able to figure out who defensively is going to be there going forward and figure out what pieces they'll need. Instead, I think they're going to spend a fair amount of time you have to try and win the Miami game. You still got a shot. But going forward and into 2021, they have to address the quarterback position. It's the most important position in sports, Dan. But really, since they traded Garoppolo, they've casted about for any solution at all. Danny Etling and Stidham are the only guys they drafted at the spot. Hoyer and Newton are the only guys who've held down the spot. And 2017 Halloween was 3 years ago.
Yeah, don't they know what they have in Stidham? And if they don't, why aren't they going to play him now?
They suspect what they have. He is no barrier to them having any future plans at the spot, meaning that he wouldn't, even if he went off the next 3 weeks, I don't think that would stop them from doing anything. Why won't they play him now? Bill is getting that question over the last 12 hours, and both times he's bristled today, said, I'm not answering that question ever again. But I think that they're looking at it as you got to dance with what brung you. He gives us a chance to score points. Cam does. If the rest of the game falls a particular way.
If I made you the,
fall that way.
If I made you the GM, what would you do?
I would probably say, Bill, it's a good idea to go ahead and use Stidham. You know, lose this game against Miami, and then we go Stidham the last two. We finish 7-9. You can't desert the players and say, we're going to Stidham to find out what's going on when there's still a mathematical chance. I think that would be, especially this year where guys are sacrificing so much, an affront. But I would probably go after Jimmy Garoppolo, Jacoby Brissett, bridge guys until you can find the answer at quarterback.
Well, Garoppolo wouldn't be a bridge.
No, you're right. I said that, and I said, ooh, get that back. Especially since he's been so overpaid in San Francisco, that's going to be fascinating to watch too, because if you're a Matt Stafford, if he gets released, or a Jimmy Garoppolo or whoever, do you want to come to New England? I mean, this attractive place for 20 years, you're going to look at it and go, who am I throwing to again? You guys going to sign a tight end at some point? And I wouldn't be dying to come here to finish my career and chase a ring.
Yeah, and while I can credit Belichick for doing some pretty good coaching this year, I can also blame Belichick for having to do some really good coaching because he doesn't have the personnel.
Right, and that's why conversations about whether or not he's coach of the year come with that caveat.
Yeah.
Well, look what he's done with Cam. Well, why is Cam here? It's because he held the door and tapped his foot until Brady walked through it. Hashtag Tommy.
Do you think Brady watches – do you think he watched that game last night?
Yeah, he likes football.
Do you think he watches it with a smile on his face at any point?
That's a good question. I think no, I don't think he smiles relative to the players on the field. But I think that there's probably a satisfaction that he takes in saying, see, I didn't throw 4 touchdowns and 10 picks. I still somehow threw 24 touchdowns with these guys. And I was supposed to be the bad guy in decline. Then, of course, he has a game this weekend. He's not been lighting the world on fire either.
No. If we're talking a month from now about the Patriots, what are we talking about?
Well, they finished 8-8. And it's weird, but it's January 10th, and they're not in the playoffs, and they're starting to try and make their decisions. You have to figure out whether Patrick Chung and Dante Hightower and Marcus Cannon and James White. I mean, they got a lot of guys, Dan, who are free agents, not just where the roster is right now and not just how much cap space they have. They have a lot of old Lions on this franchise that are free agents. So I don't even know if the rebuild has started.
Could you see Bill ever coaching a different team?
Wesleyan lacrosse.
That's it. Not in the NFL. No?
No, I don't. I don't see that happening. I don't know if he could kick upstairs and be a consultant and have Steven Belichick perhaps be a head coach, or, you know, Mayo or someone like that. But I really think that, and he is such a detail-oriented guy, Dan, and, you know, you've dealt with him. I just don't think he would want to walk away and give anybody the satisfaction of saying, yeah, well, Bill drove the team into the ground at the end once Brady left. I think he would be stubborn enough to say, no, I'm not going anywhere.
Thanks for joining us as always, Tom. We appreciate your time, and happy holidays, as they like to say.
All right, buddy. Thanks, my friend. Say hi to Michael.
That's Tom E. Curran, Patriots insider, NBC Sports. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern, or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app. In case you're wondering how we were able to book Michael Bublé, this all started because we were watching the Christmas at Rockefeller Center last week, and then Paulie was distraught because Michael Bublé wasn't performing. So I said to Todd, reach out to Michael Bublé's people and find out, is everything okay with Michael Bublé? Because Mariah Carey may be, you know, Miss Christmas or whatever she is, but Michael Bublé is Mr. Christmas. He sold over 75 million records worldwide and numerous number one hits. He wins awards. We get nominated. He wins. And, of course, the number one holiday album, Christmas, every year since its original release in 2011. Christmas jumps back into the top 10 on the Billboard 200 album chart. Michael Bublé, the pride of British Columbia, joins us on the program. Michael, how are you today?
Hi, Mr. Patrick. Happy Hanukkah to everybody.
Well, I want to know if you're over the 1994 Stanley Cup final. Are you over it?
Never. Never. Any chance I have to trash Mark Messier, I do. Even though I'm sure he's a great human being, it was that was horrible. And I was there. I went and I was in the festivities or the riot, both of them. And it's hard. As a Canuck fan, it's a tough thing to take.
Have you talked to Messier about that?
No. Oh, okay. I was in an NHL awards where I presented something and I sat behind him and I just glared at him.
But if you saw him and you were doing a show, would you call him out or say trash talk with Mark Messier?
Oh, like, you know what? I think trash talk is a very healthy thing. Honestly, I do. It's honestly the reason when I watched that segment with you guys were kind of taking the piss out of me a bit. And I thought that, I thought, you know what? I have to go and see Dan. I've got to be on this show now. I've got to talk to these guys. And I know what you've done for Sandler's career. And I was hoping if I could just get a bit of that.
Do you want me to see if I can get you into a Sandler movie?
Are you, can I tell you, honest to God, that is my family and I, he is our favorite. Like anything he does, we are crazy about.
Okay.
Crazy
about. When we get done, I promise you, I will text you and then I will say that you would like to do a cameo.
Oh, I'll be an idiot. Whatever.
No, I do that. That's my role, Michael. I'm the idiot in Sandler movie. I will text him. Now, to recap what we did, we were talking about Michael Bublé, and then we all did our Michael Bublé impersonations. So we were.
Hey, cool guy. Hey, so winging that stuff.
Yeah, baby. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Now, I don't know if this is. Is it Tony Bennett? Is it Ella Fitzgerald? How did you find your voice?
That's a great question. You know, it's funny. I was thinking about this morning. I think like all of us, we all have people that we idolize. We all have people that mean a lot to us. And so we borrow from them. We steal from them. And so I stole from everyone I could steal with little things. I took the way that say Dean Martin would drop his epiglottis. It's the way he would kind of have that thing where Elvis Presley's vibrato, or the Sinatra, the way Sinatra would sing on his vowels, A, E, I, O, U, or whatever. There's all of these things. Ella Fitzgerald, she had sort of the way that she would bounce between notes. I would steal it all. And at first I was nothing but a thief. I truly was. I could tell you what I sounded like. And it took me years. I mean, even after I got signed, I think I was into my third record before I really started to find my own distinct style. Up till then, I think I was really no more than a kid just trying to impersonate the people that I loved, you know? But I think that's the same for everybody. If you're in broadcasting, it's like, I have many friends that are broadcasters, it's the same thing. They look at guys and girls that came in before them and they just tried to steal. And then they finally did become themselves.
But you grew up, you wanted to be an athlete. You wanted to be a hockey player. Like at what point do you go, okay, I can't be, you know, a tough guy, hockey player. I'm going to be a crooner.
It hasn't stopped. I still have fantasies where I can hear the announcer saying, and the Vancouver Canucks proudly select with the first pick overall from Burnaby, Michael Bublé. You know, I'm 44 years old and I still do it. I still do it, man.
So you still want to be Pavel Bure?
Are you kidding me? Are you the Russian rocket?
He was so good.
He was amazing. I was there at the first game at the Pacific Coliseum. And my grandfather had season's tickets. And I remember him coming from behind the net. I think it was the Winnipeg Jets. And honest to God, and I've never seen anything like it again in sports. At least I haven't witnessed it being there. Everyone in the crowd, about 14,000 people, as he started to take off from behind his own net, we all started almost like jockeys on a horse. Everyone started to lift out of their seats. And you could see people starting to sort of move, and it was unbelievable. He rushed from all the way from the other end. He didn't get the goal, but by the time he had made the turn from the net, there was a buzz through that building like there will never be again. It was unbelievable. And then of course, you know, he just went on to, you know, 60 goals, 110 points over and over again.
Yeah, there's certain guys that you see and they just skate at a different speed. Like there's just something about them. But then you come across Gretzky and you go, yeah. I don't know what he does really well.
Yeah.
But he's the greatest player of all time. Like, how do you explain that?
Yeah, there's a kid that we have on the Canucks right now named Elias Pettersson. He's a Swedish kid. Really great kid. Nice guy. But he has that. He has that thing where he may not be the fastest or the biggest guy. But it seems like, you know, they always, it sounds like a cliche, but they'd always say with Gretzky, he's not going to where the puck is. He's going to where the puck's going to be. And Pettersson is like that. You watch him calculating in his mind what is about to happen, what things are happening. And some of the plays he makes, it's crazy. It's very strange. It's almost that the play slows down. Everything slows down for him, where the game is such a fast game, obviously, for other people. But for him, you just watch it. It's just a chill mode. And the next thing you know, the puck's in the net.
He's Michael Bublé, the singer-songwriter, multi-platinum and multi-Grammy award-winning artist. Full disclosure, my late mother-in-law came home one day, and she said she wanted to know if we had any Michael Bublé music. And I said, I don't know who Michael Bublé is, Nanny. And then she goes, you know Michael Bublé? He does all the Christmas music. I said, Michael Bublé? And she said, oh, no, it's Bublé. So I don't know if you ever get that, but my late mother-in-law loved Michael Bublé.
People never get my name. I mean, it's the whole reason I do the bubbly ads, the Pepsi bubbly, because they may call me bubbly, booble, boobles, boobs. In other countries, they call me, that's what they call me. In Spain, they say Miguel Burbuja, which is bubble in Spanish. In Ireland, I'm Mickey Bubbles. In a lot of the UK, I'm the Boobs, Mr. Boobs. It's funny, when I first signed, the company kept saying, listen, we really need to change your name. It's a crap name, and people are never going to buy records from a name Bublé, Bubbles.
What happened?
So I'm glad I didn't.
What happened at Rockefeller Center? We were worried that you weren't performing.
I don't know what to say. I mean, the record that I have out right now is 9 years old.
Yeah.
So there's nothing to promote. I don't.
Yeah, but you're Mr. Christmas.
I don't know.
Like Mariah Carey is the queen of Christmas.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I don't know. That's you're proclaiming that, but I.
No,
I
she proclaims that, but I'm.
Oh, she proclaims that.
Yeah, yeah.
No.
She's the queen of Christmas.
I'd like to be the queen of everything.
But you can be the king of Christmas.
Could I still be the queen? Could it be a queen thing, or is it?
Well, you are Michael Boobs, so sure.
Michael Boobs could easily be the queen. Who knows how things are going to roll with my wife? You know what I mean?
I know. I know. I want you to be the judge here. Todd, you want to start first with your Michael Bublé impersonation? All right, and just tell us what you think.
Oh, I'm so excited to hear this.
Okay, I'm sure you are. Okay, Todd, are you ready?
Fire is so delightful, and since we've no place to go, let it snow, let it snow, let it snow.
All righty.
That's not bad at all. That's got a little Bill Murray in there.
One of the great singers of all time, Bill Murray.
I don't mind that. I thought that was pretty good.
All right. McLovin, you don't sing, do you?
Can I give my turn to Todd for a second song?
No. I can't have Todd.
Oh,
Todd doesn't get... No.
One more verse.
All right.
Man, it doesn't show signs of stopping. And I brought me some corn for popping. The lights are turned way down low. Let it snow, let it snow, let it snow.
All righty. Seton O'Connor.
Oh, you guys are killing me.
Well, you know, Michael, I was thinking, since you sort of brought back that style of like that crooner style, I think what we're missing right now is more of the Bing Crosbys of the world, the sort of come late home, pa-rum-pa-pum-pum. I think that there's a market for that right now, more of a modern Bing.
I think so,
Bing.
Too.
I was just listening to Bing Crosby, David Bowie last night at the dinner table. And, my wife goes, you know, that's David Bowie's number one single. I go, it's not Bing Crosby's number one single, but I know it's David Bowie's number one single. All right, Paulie.
Can you do that one piece again? Because I feel like it may not work for Christmas, but it could work for a porno.
Okay. Seton?
Because I keep it down here, I think is what you're saying.
Yeah, come. Pum, pum. They told me. Rumba pum pum.
Yeah. Okay, Paul.
All right, Michael, you're never going to feel better about your singing skills in about 3 seconds. Here it is from Sinatra, my favorite line. A lady doesn't wander all over the room and blow on some other guy's dice. I just like, the line. It. I can't say.
I love Luck Be a Lady. That's a great tune.
Luck Be a Lady tonight. Yeah. If do you like it's Sinatra? Who else would you say would be go to?
I liked Sinatra a lot, but I think easily my favorites were Dean Martin.
Dean Martin underrated Nat though, Cole. Michael.
Dean Martin was amazing, man. That guy made things look like they were easy.
Yeah,
and they weren't easy. It wasn't easy. He was great.
And Nat King
I
Cole?
Loved his whole thing. Nat King Cole, I loved Nat. I loved how he sang. I loved that voice. I love a lot of the ladies. I love Ella and I love Sarah Vaughan. I like the new, a lot of like Diana Krall. I'm a massive fan of Diana. Big Connick fan, Cincotti, Cullum. There's a bunch of modern guys and girls that I, Cecile McLaurin-Savant is a great jazz singer. You're never going to listen to any of these, I'm guessing, but they're really good, really talented people.
No, Diane, I've heard of.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, what's cool, you guys, is I feel really protective of this genre because, I know I'm Canadian, but this is the greatest gift I think America ever gave to the arts, you know? And I think that we just, I want to be part of keeping it alive and introducing it to people because it deserves to be. It's such a beautiful root of so much of the music that we now love. Everything from rock to R&B to, you know, rap, everything. It's sort of the root of that.
Well, we gave that to you, but Canada gave us Rush, though, Michael. Yeah. So,
yes.
Yeah. Could you sing songs like that? If I said, you know, something. Like
I do sing songs. If you guys actually listened to me or came to a concert, you would see that I do. But because you don't, you have just put me into this place, you know? Unlike me, who watches everything you guys do and is completely in love with you.
But here, I'm it's okay here to that, learn.
Listen, I wish, would you guys come to hang once, come to a show, just hang with me, bring your girls, bring your wives and come and chill with me?
Absolutely.
And can I ask one more favor?
Yes. Yes, you can.
One of the big reasons, I mean, of the many reasons I wanted to do this. Firstly, I'm a huge fan. I think you guys, what you do is so great. I really do. And I watch all the time. I'm fascinated by what you do. I love the world that you live in. I am 5 points behind in my fantasy league. I know that Spade asked for help once, and I'm asking for help because I think I can take this guy and go to the finals. We started a week early in 14.
Okay.
I have the issue. This is, it's my team started off. I was 9-3. I mean, Kyler Murray, who was going to stop Kyler Murray? I mean, Alvin Kamara, you couldn't stop Alvin Kamara. I was going to kill everybody. And all of a sudden, Breeze went out. Kyler got hurt in Seattle. Anyway, in my flex position, my wide receivers are great. I got a plethora to choose from.
Okay.
But in my flex, I've got to go between Dobbins, Sanders, which just they're saying that he's going to get more work, but it freaks me out. The team he's playing against, and God, is he going to get more work? And the third, who is my third? Mostert. And I love Mostert, and I put him in last week, and I got Shanahan. So what would you guys do?
Yeah, McLovin.
We have a guy in the back, Mario, who has Dobbins on his team, and he emailed yesterday the group and said, should I play Dobbins or Cam Akers for the Rams? And we all said Dobbins, and then Cam Akers just had the night of his life last night. So you should not
be asking
him.
I played him in two of my leagues last night. And I can't even tell. And I'm in the deep playoffs in two of those leagues, and I was crying with joy.
How important is fantasy in your life?
More important than my family. No, I mean, I my friends think I have an issue. They really do. Cause I take it. So I love it so much. I have so much fun. And I'm so passionate about it that it takes up a lot of my life.
Have you met Russell Wilson?
I have not met Russell Wilson. I'm a big fan though.
I can make that happen too.
Oh, I'd love that. You know, because I'm from Vancouver. So our team is the Seahawks.
Yeah.
So it's weird when you go around Vancouver, you see all these people in Seahawks uniforms. We're big Seahawks fans.
Can we play? We have something called Stat of the Day, and I have happening. Will Ferrell's done it. Darius Rucker's done it. And all it is just, can we play Will Ferrell or Darius Rucker just to give Michael an idea of what it sounds like?
Stat of the day, stat of the day, tap, tap. Stat of the day, stat of the day. Here comes that what? Stat of the day.
Tap. Okay, so that's Will Ferrell as Ron Burgundy. Here's Melissa Etheridge.
Woo! Ow! Stat of the day, stat of the day. Stat of the day, stat of the day. This is the stat of the day.
And then here's Darius Rucker.
Stat of the day, stat of the day. Here comes the stat of the day, yay. Stat of the day, stat of the day. Here comes the stat of the day.
Now, I'm going to put you on the spot. You could either do it here, or if you wanted to go to your recording studio and dress it up, and you could do it that way.
I could do like a serious production of it?
Yeah, like I'll let you have that option because...
I would do both. I would do one live here and okay, I would give you right. I would give you a massive 75 piece orchestra.
Okay. All right. So it's you a cappella. So
well, boom, 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 stat of the day, stat of the day. Oh baby, it's the stat of the day. Stat of the day, stat of the day. It's the stat of the day. Wow. Grammys.
You're welcome back anytime. And if you come around in the Northeast in New York, we're coming. We're going
to
be there.
What a blast that would be. Thank you guys so much. And thank you.
And good luck with the album that is not new, but it feels like it's new every Christmas.
Thank you.
Thank you, buddy. Again.
Thanks for having
me. That is Michael Bublé, Michael Boobs, joining us on the program. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live on the Peacock app.